Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com. Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Another week of Comics Talk Comedy. No Jesse this week. He's out in Yuma, Arizona, doing a show with a couple of folks. But I do have a guest this week, Aaron Baines. Thanks for coming in, man.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going? Thanks
Good.
For having me.
Yeah, many people might not know this, but you were actually around when I first started.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember seeing you a lot.
Yeah.
And you were getting on stage, and I was just hanging in the back trying to hopefully get on the open mic. And I definitely saw a lot of your sets in the beginning. And I definitely remember a time when I was walking to Winston's, like at 3 o'clock, like on a Saturday, probably like 2007, I want to say.
Well, I started in 2009.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe. Wow, dude.
So you started that much earlier than me.
Huh? I don't even remember. Actually, it's hard for me to, like not that I don't remember, but I just remember exactly, you know, because I started for like a year or so on and off, and I just quit.
Okay.
But so maybe, yeah, it was probably 2009, because I think I was working as an insurance agent.
Okay.
And I drove down the hill from kind of in Claremont down to Ocean Beach. It wasn't that far away.
Right.
And I went to go sign up for the open mic. And I saw you walking out, like, oh, hey, did you sign up? And you're just like, eh. Like, that was it.
I wonder if I did. Because I was living down that area. And I remember at that time, Bob was still running it. And you'd have to go early.
Yeah, you'd have to, super early.
Like, so I would go down at, like, 3 o'clock, put my name down.
Yeah.
And then go back home and then come back.
Yeah.
Because they had a bunch of regulars that were already on the show.
Yeah.
But
And I would go, and I just didn't get on stage a lot of times, you know.
Yeah.
I would still watch and hang out for a little bit.
I was so new to comedy that I would just kind of do my set, and I would usually leave at, like, I don't know, 7, 7.30 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize Bob was a comic for the longest time.
Oh, yeah.
Because he would just host, but I would leave before he did his set.
Yeah.
So I didn't even realize he was a comic.
Yeah, that's, like, in the same situation I am, because I'm a little bit pressed for time because I got kids and stuff. So a lot of times I'll leave right after an open mic. So
yeah.
I know there's, you know, all these other guys who headline shows or get spots on a regular basis, but a lot of times I won't see their set.
Mm.
I mean, I want to just because, like, I feel pressured to go home, or my wife's asked me to come home right away after I finish.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I'll see a ton of the open mic, but I don't see, like, a lot of times the regular show, which I sort of regret.
Right. So you don't know exactly when you first started?
No, the year, I want to say 07, I might have. It could be 08. Could be, I want to say 07 or 08.
Okay.
And I did like an open mic at the Comedy Store.
Okay.
And
how'd that go?
It had to have been 08, I guess. Nothing. I really had no clue of like how to like structure a joke or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it went that well. And I kind of was like on the more towards the, I guess there was a little bit of, kind of had a little bit of dirty material, you know.
Were you married at that time?
No, but my wife was living with me. She moved here in 2006.
Okay.
Wow, dude, I thought you started way earlier than 2009, by the way.
No. I wish.
But I want to say the store, and then I tried Winston's.
Okay.
So I must have started later than I thought. For some reason, I thought it was 06, but I must have started like 08 or something where I actually went to an open mic.
Okay.
But I went like sporadically, so it's hard for me to like pinpoint the actual date.
Because I remember seeing you a lot at Brick by Brick.
Yeah, I think I only did that place maybe once or twice. But I do remember seeing you like all around, though, for
yeah.
sure. And then you were like probably with like Rajan and Christian and all those guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like me, Rajan, Christian, Billy.
Yeah.
Kind of started all at the same time.
Yeah.
Those guys started a little bit before me, but pretty much we were the kind of the crew that were together.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. And I took a writing class at UCSD Extension, and Rajan was in it.
Okay.
Like a creative writing class, and that me and him both were interested in stand up, and I remember him talking about going down. So I kind of that kind of motivated me to try it again. But I think before meeting him in that class, I had tried stand up a few times. So I want to say 07, 08 in that time frame is when I probably first went to an open mic.
Mm-hmm.
But it was sporadic, you know. And then because there were fewer mics back then,
well,
you know,
of course, yeah,
in San Diego, and you would go like to Winston's and like maybe not get on. So after a couple times of doing that, I was just like,
waiting for you.
Yeah. And then my wife got pregnant. And so my main goal was just to get a job. And because I had just finished college in, I think, 08.
Mm-hmm.
And so I must have tried in 07. I think I might have tried in 07. But anyways, around that time frame, my wife got pregnant in 08. We had our kid in 09. And so once she got pregnant, I think I just sort of...
Was that pressure from her, or was that more on you?
From her a little bit, you know. I'd say she definitely wanted me to be at home and be nearby just in case.
Right.
Because she was sort of like, she had these other, like, health issues, so it made it sort of high risk.
Okay.
I just felt like, you know, she had a point that I did, you know, I should sort of prioritize her, you know, being pregnant and all that. And,
right. So what do you do for work now?
I work at the VA hospital.
Okay.
In La Jolla, and I was in the Army, so like they give veterans preference. Well, for any federal job, they give federal preference.
Right.
For veterans. And so I've been there since 2010.
Okay.
And
must be a pretty good paying job, I would imagine.
It's not super high paying.
Okay.
Depending on what level, you know, that's like in pay grade, kind of like the military, like you're in the Air Force, is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And you were in what?
The Army.
Okay.
For 7 years. And it's like just depending what level you're at, you know, like what pay grade you're at, you know?
Okay.
So I've been in an admin position, and admin's kind of tough just because there's not a lot of openings there. It's a hospital, so it's like mostly doctors and nurses and then
right.
a limited amount of admin jobs. So you kind of have to like wait in line to move up the ladder.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Bay Area. Actually moved all over, but the Bay Area, East Bay, Oakland, Berkeley. And then like in the middle of eighth grade, I moved to St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay. With your family or?
Yeah, just my mom. My parents were divorced. So just all me right. and her, and I was the only child. So,
why did you choose St. Paul, Minnesota?
She got a job out there. She was a graduate student at UC Berkeley.
All
and,
right.
Her field was public health. And so she got a job as a, like, in healthcare, I guess, trying to help Native American people, gain healthcare access.
So were both of your parents Native American?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that can't be very popular. How is divorce in the Native American
culture? Oh, it's probably high.
Is it high?
It's like sky high. Like higher than average, probably.
Okay. So it's not frowned upon then?
No. No, I mean, I'm sure that it's not, people aren't pumped, you know, when like you tell your family you're getting divorced, but. Ain't nothing new. I'm sure it's like that for most American people nowadays. Divorce is pretty common.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm sure it's probably slightly higher in the Native American community.
Why is that?
Well, I guess there's just a lot of challenges in the Native American community, like, you know, drugs, alcohol, you know, probably being a little bit poor, coming from the reservation. You know, probably half the Native American people live on reservations, so... It's just tough out there because there's not a lot going on.
So both your parents were Native American?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, my dad's deceased, but yeah, he was Native American from Alaska, and my mom's from San Diego.
Okay, how did they meet?
I think when they were both in grad school, they both were in graduate school attending like a conference.
And that can't be very popular, Native American in grad school, I wouldn't imagine. no offense, but
You mean like popular amongst your family or?
No, meaning like if there isn't a common? Lot of people that, yeah, common, I guess.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm sure it's not. But both my parents did go to college and that's where they met, like at a conference. And so, yeah, it's not super common, but I guess for them, they were in programs and they found, I guess, little programs to help themselves, to help the Native American students, stuff like that.
Okay.
So they found sort of like little niches to sort of little groups and stuff like that. Like,
how's the Native American population in St. Paul, Minnesota?
There's a few in Minneapolis because there's a few reservations like North Minnesota.
All right.
And so there's quite a, you know, there's a decent amount of Native American people in the Twin Cities. They probably moved from the reservation. So like, you know how like probably some parts of the country, like, there's probably zero, like, you know, very few Native Americans. But, you know, I think people in Minnesota are aware of the Native American population there.
Okay.
You know, the Native Americans are, I guess, a visible group there in St. Paul, Minneapolis.
And do you get anything for being Native American?
Like, do I get, like, money?
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. How much money do you get?
Oh, man, I can't say. I mean, not that I
really?
Don't want to tell you, but. I'm a member of the Paula tribe, you know, north
on
I-15, Paula Casino. Yeah, that reservation is right there, where the casino's at.
Okay.
And, it's a good amount, you know what I mean? I'm not complaining, but I don't want to blow up everyone's spot. Okay. And so just because I don't want to, you know, divulge and speak. But yeah, like
legally, are you not allowed to say it?
I don't know, but I think it is frowned upon.
All right.
I want to say, and I just don't want to be known as somebody who's out there blabbing. But I'm sure, like, if you search the internet, you could find it. Like, if you wanted to look on like blogs and sort of do it.
So how does it work? Do you get a certain amount, or is it a percentage of what they made that year or whatever?
So you have to be a member, and so I'm a member. Like, when I was a kid, I was enrolled, and we weren't getting money back then. Like, the casino wasn't built to, like, man, you're making me realize I'm horrible on dates. I am really horrible about
how old are you?
37.
Okay.
And so years don't mean anything now.
I guess not.
But I want to say, like, 2001, around that time frame, all the right. casino was in business.
All right.
And I was in the Army still, and so that's when we started getting a little bit of money, and ever since then, it's gone up. And so when I was a kid, we didn't get anything.
Do you have to do anything?
Just maintain your membership. Don't die.
Don't die. Okay. That's pretty easy.
Yeah. Don't get kicked out of the tribe or, you know.
All right.
Don't try to do anything on the reservation. Is there
what would get you kicked out?
So if you live there, you know, if you did something on the reservation that was like, you know, like sort of like a criminal activity or something that's sort of disruptive or radical right. or just sort of harmful to the reservation, you know, like basically crime or, okay. you know, doing something that would
if you gave up drinking, would they kick you out?
No. I should give up drinking.
That's not one of the rules. Yeah, you had a little funny story about drinking we'll get back to after the break.
Yeah, let's do that.
But, yeah, I think that's interesting. You got a lot of different perspective that we don't have.
Sure.
You're my first Native American guest, I believe.
Awesome.
Yeah. Are you the only one? Well, we got to go to break.
All right.
You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Bye-bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Still no Jesse, but we got more with Aaron Baines. So growing up, you just were with your mom, and you didn't really keep in track. Were you talking with your dad much?
Yeah, rarely. You know, like around the holidays, every now and then. And my dad kind of moved around a lot.
Yeah.
He didn't have a lot of stability. Like, he would get jobs, and, like, he'd probably lose it or move to another city. And, like, he would call me every now and then. He didn't really pay child support. And so we'd talk on the phone, and he'd do this really weird thing where he'd, like, at the very end of the phone conversation, he'd be like, okay, bye, like super fast. Like, he'd say bye really fast.
Really?
That's one thing I remember about my dad.
He'd say I love you a lot?
Yeah, he'd say I love you.
Okay.
Yeah, he'd say I love you, like, on the phone and stuff like that. But he was a real weird dude. He was just a different kind of guy, you know. I think he wasn't, like, super warm, you know.
Okay.
He was like...
Well, is that typical in the Native American father culture?
I guess. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't know, honestly. Like, I see myself as a Native American. That's my person, like, I identify myself that way. But I guess I didn't grow up on an Indian reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather is Native American, but he was very warm. I suppose, I mean, that may exist, but I honestly couldn't tell you from firsthand experience of how it is. How I saw a lot of fathers on the, you know, on the reservation.
Okay.
It's possible.
Yeah, because it's interesting to me because I don't know any Native American.
Yeah.
So it's interesting just to get the culture. Because from the outside, it just seems like that's a stern people.
Yeah. Probably the media probably portrays it that way, you know. But I feel like I've known some hilarious Native American people. You know what I mean?
So, any famous Native American comedians?
Yeah, there was that one guy, Charlie Hill. He performed at the store probably back in, I want to say, I saw him at the store. And I had met him before, actually.
The La Jolla store?
Yeah. And he died recently, and they did, like I'm on, like, some Native American Facebook pages, and so they did, like, they tried to raise money for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a good dude, you know. Like, he was, like he knew Arsenio and all those dudes from the store back in the, like, what, 60s, 70s, something like that. But he knew a lot. I think he performed with a lot of, like, you know, big-name dudes back in the 70s at the store in Hollywood.
Right. There's no, like, You know, they have, like, chocolate sundaes. Is there any, like, all Native American
Native American. That would be Fry Bread Mondays. I don't know.
Do they have any of those kind of shows that you know about?
You know, I did see a Native American comedy show on Showtime.
Really?
And there was a guy, and he's, like, I think, I don't know if he, where he lives. Somewhere here in California. I want to say by L.A., maybe.
Right.
Maybe he lives on a reservation. His name is J.R. Redwater.
Oh, I've heard of him, actually.
And he does stuff. And so he was probably, I think, the headliner of that show. And he's like, you can definitely tell from a mile away he looks Native American.
Mm.
Plus the name J.R. Redwater
right.
kind of stands out, too.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, putting together a whole show, I haven't seen one. Maybe if you go to, like, an area where there's more Native American people, but who knows? You know what I mean? Like, comedy itself is sort of like a niche
yeah,
in itself, you know, a small
right.
thing. But I'd be happy to perform in one.
Do you have a Native American name? Do they do that?
I used to go to the Sweat Lodge when I was a kid.
Okay.
When I was in high school, I started going to a Sweat Lodge. It's kind of like
what
church.
A Sweat Lodge.
Okay. It's like a little small, like a small dome, like enclosure, like building with like built with like tree branches and like maybe like canvas or something, some type of cloth material over the top. And inside the Sweat Lodge, there's like a little pit where they put rocks that have been heating up in fire, like outside for mm-hmm. like hours and hours and hours, so they're super hot.
Right.
And then the medicine man or the person who's leading the ceremony pours water over them, and it creates like a sauna effect or like a steam room effect mm-hmm. inside of the Sweat Lodge.
Right.
And that's a Native American tradition or culture. Many different tribes have practiced that. And they go in there. It's like church. And so you sing songs, you pray. If you speak your own language from what tribe you're from, you would pray in that language if you knew how. But white people went in the Sweat Lodge, too. I went to the Sweat Lodge with a lot of white people, too.
Okay.
And it was like church, but better. You know what I mean? Like, more personal, more, and afterwards we'd get out and we'd go on for like an hour and we'd get out and have like a big meal. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times in high school, I did that for like 2-3 years. And instead of like going out to hang out on like a Friday or Saturday night, I would go do that. And so like, I didn't really party as much in high school, you know,
right.
as maybe some people did. But I still, you know, had a, you know.
But did you have an Indian name?
Oh, so yeah. So when I went there, back to that,
yeah.
I became friends with the medicine man. I felt like this was like my dude, right? This was like, I really looked up to him. He started calling me Dirty Buffalo.
Dirty Buffalo.
But it was more as a joke kind of thing, like a okay. nickname, like not an official Native American
name.
Did
you just smell bad and you were big?
No, Dirty Buffalo meant like a dude who's like a real like player, like a pimp, you know?
Uh-oh. Were you macking on the ladies back
no,
then?
No, I think it was sort of like a like an opposite nickname. like calling a fat guy tiny or something.
Oh, okay. So he's ragging on you then.
Yeah, just kind of teasing me, but I definitely I looked up to him like an uncle kind of, you know?
Okay.
And I respected the fact that, you know, I liked him also because he was Native American. I didn't have that many other Native American male figures in my life.
Okay. So when did you become a fan of stand-up comedy?
I guess, like, I always liked it, you know, like flipping through the channels as a kid. And then, like, in 11th grade, this one dude next to me had a Def Comedy Jam, like, videotape mm-hmm. that he was recorded, like, on New Year's Eve. He's like, hey, I recorded, like, 5 hours straight of HBO Def Comedy.
On VHS.
On VHS. So this was high school, like, 94, I want to say.
Yeah.
And he gave it to me. And it was just like 5 hours of nonstop HBO Def Comedy Jam.
So they're cursing and everything.
Oh, yeah, tons.
Did your mom know you watched it?
I think a little bit, but I don't think she minded. Like, my mom didn't really care about me listening to swearing. I mean, I think if it was, like, porn, she'd probably be mad. But, but like, just swearing by itself, I don't think she really.
Yeah.
Because I was down in the basement. Like, I was by myself down there. So, like, she didn't know.
Okay.
And I was like, you know.
Just being that dirty buffalo.
Yeah.
Watching the stand-up.
Yeah, exactly. Just watching the stand-up, dude. And then, yeah. And so that's when I really sort of started liking it. And then I went in the Army, like, right after high school. And I would find myself.
Was that your choice, or did you not? Did you want to go into the military?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like my grandfather had joined, and my dad was National Guard. A couple uncles joined the military, like different branches. And that guy Floyd, the medicine man, was mm-hmm. in the Army. He would always talk about it.
Right.
And I kind of liked traveling because I had taken a trip to Europe when I was in high school at a younger age, and I really wanted to travel as well. And I wasn't a great student, wasn't really that interested in going to college. And so I just joined up when I was like 17 years old.
What do you think of boot camp?
Well, in the Army, we call it basic training.
Okay.
But same.
I think they all call it basic training.
Same shit. No, I think Marines call it boot camp.
Okay.
But at first it was scary, and then you know it was kind of you know obviously crazy. Like it puts like the fear of God in you, like trying to break your
right.
Your that sort of casual mentality that most high school kids have,
mm-hmm.
And definitely breaks you down into like wanting to be a team to try and train you to be like part of a team and. Toward the beginning, I hated it, you know, but toward the end, in the middle, I started enjoying parts of it. Like the PT, the running, I was a good runner back then because I did cross country, and so I didn't mind that.
Right.
And there were, I mean, a lot of times it was like horrible, you know, because you didn't get much sleep and it was like bad conditions and people yelling at you, but, toward the end, I didn't mind it as much.
Yeah. And it's been 20 years since you went to boot camp.
Almost, yeah. I went in 95.
95, yeah. So what did you do in the Army?
I was a combat engineer. I don't know if you watched MTV a lot growing up, but they had a commercial. And so my job was in one of those commercials where we would take these, like, floating bridge pieces and put them together to cross, like, rivers and stuff
okay.
like that. And so tanks and vehicles would cross the river. The name of it was Bridge Crewman, but the... part of the Army was called Combat Engineers. So, like, the series was Combat Engineers. The specific job was Bridge Crew Member.
You did how many years?
Seven. But I changed my job to Light Infantry.
Okay.
Like, sort of after a couple
Why did
years.
You decide to get out?
The Army had tried to send me to recruiting school. And so I turned it down immediately because I did not want to be a recruiter for the Army because I right. felt like that's just being sort of like a salesman
right.
for the Army. And I didn't want to, I wasn't interested in that, you know.
Why did they make you do that?
They sent me orders. They sent me orders to go to recruiting school. Like, your next assignment is recruiting school.
Can they do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You can turn it down.
Okay.
Which I did. But that's like a sort of resignation. That's like a big, like, you know, fuck you to the Army.
Okay.
And so it's like after that point, you can only get out. Like you can't get promoted. You can't go to school.
Oh, wow.
You can't. You're limited.
Cause I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is that still a thing? Is it just in the Army or is it all the
No, branches? I think all the branches you can decline an assignment, but you, I think, have to get out after that.
Wow.
Like, you know, you won't get promoted after that.
Yeah, that's kind of tough. Did yeah. you plan to stay in?
No, I think that was it. Like there was a part of me that wanted to stay in, but I just sort of, the last 2-3 years, I was starting to, like, fade on it a little bit, mm-hmm. motivation-wise.
And where were you stationed?
I was stationed at Fort Drum, New York, when I got out. Upstate.
I actually went there.
Oh, yeah?
I did a 2-week deployment there. That is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it sucks up there. Nothing but fat chicks outside the gate, man.
Yeah. Even around, there's nothing to do. I mean,
yeah, it's horrible. We went to Canada.
Did
That's
it?
How bad it was.
Yeah.
Canada was pretty nice. Canada
yeah.
was, like, 20 miles away.
Okay.
And so we'd go up to Ottawa, go to Montreal, Toronto, Kingston.
Yeah.
And back then, the economy was different, so it was a lot cheaper.
Yeah. I remember, because I used to go to Montreal, like, every summer. And
oh, yeah.
our dollar was, like, twice almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But now I think Canada's caught up.
Yeah. the last time I went, Canada was ahead of us, actually.
Yeah, they might yeah. be, yeah.
So, man, it's interesting. Well, when we come back, we get, because you want to talk about a couple of things that you've got happening at Porter's Pub.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
comedy
you got,
show.
You got a comedy show over there. How's that been going so far?
Pretty good.
Pretty good? I've heard otherwise, but
okay.
No, that's good.
Oh, are we still going? Oh, I thought we were in our break.
No, we got 20 seconds.
Oh, okay.
So why did you decide to put on your own show?
Well, I saw that they had comedy shows, like, maybe a year ago, year and a half ago, mm-hmm. From Jonathan.
Right.
And they had stopped him, so I just called Porter's. Asked for the manager and asked if he was interested in doing another comedy show.
All right. Well, we got more with Aaron Baines coming back. You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. Be back in 3 minutes. Bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Third segment already. So what made you decide to kind of put on your own show?
Well, I was primarily doing open mics, and I just wanted to get some more stage time and sort of use that as a platform to sort of network with and just to get myself more stage time, you
okay.
know, to network with other comics and then just get stage time for myself and have some sort of say on, you know, the show. And it's exciting to try and put on your own show, you know, especially if it goes well.
All right. So you like booking it? You like asking people?
I do like that part. And I think it's a lot of fun putting it together and just seeing how it turns out. And then, especially when you go there and you get comics that you like and they do well and the crowd likes them, and it's mm-hmm. just, you know, it's a great feeling.
You I'm have sure another one booked? Or
November 19th.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're thinking of going to the free show model because it's during the week on a Wednesdays. We haven't had a huge turnout since our first show.
So you've been charging people to get in?
Yeah.
Okay.
But then, yeah, so that hasn't gone super, you know, that hasn't gone really well. So I think we may go to a free show model and just try and work out something with the owner as far as getting some compensation, you know, because it is an effort to try and promote. And
so it's strictly a door deal that you've set up
yeah,
with them?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But you did have another interesting, exciting times at Porter's Pub this week.
I did, yeah. What I went happened? To a hip hop show and
by yourself?
No, I went with some friends.
Okay.
Thanks. Randomly went to a hip hop show by myself just to see it. No. So I've gotten to know the owner a little bit, and a friend of mine was performing in the show.
Okay.
And there was a bigger name hip hop star or hip hop, you know, guy Greaves. I don't know if you've heard of him,
no.
But he's sort of like a do-it-yourself rapper, you know, sort of like from the underground, but I guess he's moving up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was the headliner, and I knew one of the guys performing on the show, and so I had tickets, and then I invited another buddy, and he brought a girl, and so we all got in, and when I saw the owner, I was like, "Hey, you know, I need one more ticket. Can you spot us a ticket to get in?" And he's like, "You know, not only will I give you a ticket, you're going to get VIP all access." And I was like, "What the heck does that mean?" He's like, "Okay, free beer, you know?"
Mm.
And so I got free beer all night. And so it was going awesome, you know, for the first hour, part of the night was going really well. I was hanging out,
right?
Buying drinks, you know, giving other people drinks and having a blast, you know? But that all came to a crashing halt because I just got hammered.
Okay.
Toward the end of the show.
So no one cut you off already?
No, I did get thrown out.
Oh, wow.
So they cut me off in that sense. I did get thrown out by security.
What did you do?
I was just hammered, and I guess it was obvious, you know. I guess I was just, like, I don't fully remember either, you know.
Okay.
Because, but Cody said I was just, like, walking up to, like, people and just, like, standing, like, right in front of them awkwardly. And I think they could just tell, you know, I was hammered,
right,
and it's time for me to go.
So have you talked to the owner since then?
I think he left already. I think he had left before that happened because he texted me. He's like, "Hey, good to see you. Let's talk again about doing another show. We're thinking about doing a show at the Pala Casino if possible."
Okay.
So I don't know if he's fully even aware of that at that time because he probably didn't stay for the whole show.
Okay. But you haven't heard from him since then. So I guess no news is good news.
Yeah. So he didn't say, like, you know, what the hell happened.
So you got thrown out and then you just got a cab home and that was it?
Not exactly.
Oh, okay. So there's more to the story.
Yeah. At some point, I think I may have, like, gone to some type of altercation. I actually don't fully know either.
Okay.
In my mind, like, I don't know if you've ever been super drunk where you blacked out. I don't know if that's ever happened to you.
Yeah.
But you know, you don't obviously remember the whole night, but
right,
you remember little snippets, little bits and pieces here and there. And I can kind of remember somebody chasing me. I don't know if it was the cop. It may have been.
Right.
And I remember them, like, catching up to me. And I just thinking, "Oh, crap, they caught me," you know? Like, in my mind, part of it felt like I was just running, like it was kind of fun for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember being kind of like probably a cop wrestling me down or something.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not proud of it, but I'm just, you know,
right,
just discussing it, you know.
So you got arrested?
I did, yeah.
Which you went to jail?
Per se, yeah.
You went to jail or the drunk tank?
Oh, well, the drunk tank is in the jail, right?
No, they're separate places. I think. I went to the drunk tank once.
Okay, well, in this case,
I was pretty sober, and I don't remember it being at the police station.
There may be separate drunk tanks, but I went to downtown San Diego,
mm-hmm,
and I went to a drunk tank there, and I went from having a VIP all-access wristband to a purple wristband in jail.
Okay.
And I was sitting around, and
did you start to sober up at that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I called my wife, and she was pissed.
Yeah.
And then I called King Solomon Bail Bonds, and I was like, "What did I get charged with?" They're like, "Drunk in public." And then I was like, "Well, can I get bailed out?" They're like, "They're just going to let you go in a few hours anyway, so there's
yeah,
no need."
Because what, you just have to pay like $50 or
I didn't even get charged. I didn't get fined or charged. And when I left, I was like, "So how does it work with the fine and the charge?" You're like, "No charge, no fine."
Wow.
Just
you got lucky.
Yeah, they're like, "Do you know what you did last night?" I was like, "Yeah, I got arrested." They're like, "Do you know where?" I was like, yeah, you know, on the college campus at UCSD. And then they were like, okay, so what are you going to do now? I was like, go home.
And your wife picked you up?
No, I took I got a free bus pass, and I took the bus back to work.
Why do you have a free bus pass?
No, they gave me the cops gave me one because I had no money on me.
Jeez, you like got a nice hotel room for the night. A
couple bologna sandwiches.
That seems like a good night.
Hanging out. I tried to tell a joke, and the guy kind of just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah.
I tried. He's like, oh, you're a comedian? Tell me a joke. You know, like one of that sort of thing that just didn't really work.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think so.
And, but yeah, I had a couple interesting experiences. I had a blue, I had a purple wristband, which meant misdemeanor, and like everybody else in there had blue wristbands, which meant felony. And so
and you're in an open room with them?
Yeah, just sitting there chilling, man.
You're like bait to them.
I know, right? And then, but I had been to jail once before, so I knew it wasn't like any big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like I didn't feel fearful. Like I wasn't like one of the smaller dudes. I was like, you know, I felt like I could handle myself. And
right. What did you go to jail for the other time?
DUI.
Okay.
Back in 06.
Ah.
Right after my worst comedy set.
So you started in 06 then?
No, I'm joking. I didn't. I just went out and got hammered that night.
Okay.
But, yeah, and then they kept giving us bologna sandwiches and,
You got fed?
Yeah.
What the fuck? What kind of jail is this?
I know.
Is this Native American jail?
No, this is regular white people jail.
Okay.
Except it was all Mexicans and Asians in there.
And they fed you?
Yeah, and there was one white guy in there, too.
Oh.
But I think he may have been white trash. I don't know.
Oh.
I'm joking.
That is an interesting evening.
And then I felt bad for all the other people because they all had the felony wristband, so you know they were like getting locked up for a while.
Right.
And this one other guy who had a purple wristband was like, hey, isn't that so cool? We got the purple wristbands. And I'm like, why are you bragging in front of all these people who are going to get locked up, you know?
Yeah, that's probably not the best idea.
And so...
So how are things with your wife?
Oh, she was pissed.
Yeah.
She was definitely pissed.
That was this week?
Yeah.
That was
on Wednesday, yeah.
Okay, so after you agreed to do the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, I can bring up this on the podcast. I was doing a long-form bit.
Yeah, jeez. So she got you on lockdown now?
No, I mean, she doesn't like me already doing comedy, because a lot of times, like, that'll happen, where I need to, especially as a result of this, need to watch my drinking consumption, alcohol consumption. But she also doesn't like it, because it's more work for her and the kids. You know, I mean, for her taking care of our kids, we have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Okay.
And so, it just, you know, it's a lot, and, you know, she doesn't like that it takes me away from the family, kind of like...
How did she feel about you taking the comedy class?
I don't think it would like fired her up.
No.
You know, because she knew I loved comedy this whole time.
Right.
And we've been to a lot of comedy shows together. And I took the comedy class first with remember Josh Lawson and Bijan.
Well, they're doing it now again.
And then I took it with you and Jesse.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, how did you feel the two compared?
They're both really really good.
Okay.
And I think the reason why is because you guys both. Teachers, both sets of teachers, you know, Josh and Bijan and you and Jesse, are in the comedy scene. You guys are established and you guys, you know the scene and know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I think.
So you felt you got something out of it?
I did, yeah.
That's good. It's important.
I appreciate, yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I definitely like both of them because, you know, I respect you guys.
Did you feel like you improved your comedy?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
For sure, because I saw you guys, just observing, you know, watching you guys work, watching you guys sort of like punch up a joke, watching you guys give your observations on the scene and shows and stuff like
that. So how did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in Madrid, Spain. We were both doing a study abroad, and I went with San Diego State. I didn't graduate from there. I just went with the summer program through State, and I was going to Mesa College at the time. And she went with Marshall University in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And we both just met at the same school on the subway. And I saw her on the subway. You know, we both just left class and we were both taking the subway home. And she looked like the type of girl that was like on the school newspaper, or like the yearbook committee, kind of like one of those
wholesome
school spirit girls.
Yeah.
And I just said, hey, what's up? You know? And I was like in better shape at the time. I was working out and I was just ready to have fun and step up to chicks and just like, you know, see what was
out
there.
Dirty buffalo.
I was being the dirty buffalo. I became the dirty buffalo. I started off
many years later,
a clean buffalo, and now I'm like years later, yeah, I kind of worked my way up to dirty buffalo status.
So how long were you guys on that trip abroad?
I was there for 6 weeks. She was there for about a month. And then after that, we just kept in contact through email.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2005 or 2006, 2005, she went to France to teach English after college.
Right.
And I went over there to visit her. And after that, she moved to San Diego after she was done with her teaching in
to
France.
To be with you?
To be with me, yeah, because she's from Ohio.
Okay. Was that some pressure to know that this woman is moving across the country?
A little bit, yeah.
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 But it seems like most of the time it worked. How long were you together before you got married?
We moved in together in 2006 when she moved out here.
Mm-hmm.
She moved into my apartment in La Jolla at the in University City area, La Jolla area. And we were there for 2 years, and then we got married in 2008.
Dream come true?
Yeah, yeah. We got two kids, a house, and...
Well,
overall, other than my drinking and
yeah. All right, we got more with Aaron Bain coming back. You're listening to WSRadio.com. More with Aaron Bain.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it's the final segment. So what's a typical week for you as far as doing open mics or shows or something?
I sort of gravitated. Like, last couple of weeks have been crazy in my life because I've had, like, my anniversary, my wife's birthday, my kid's birthday. So I haven't, my last show was, I think, on October, like, 12th or 11th. I did that benefit for Ric Flair.
Okay.
Down in Point Loma.
All right.
And since then, I have not gotten on stage a couple times since my kids got sick. But normally, I'll do, like the Palace. Then I'll try and get on at the Madhouse and try and double dip. And one or two times before that, I added even, like, Peabody's in, because they have an open mic, too, on Mondays, or they used to.
But they're just on Tuesday now, open.
Yeah, they had the music open mic on Mondays.
Okay.
Before Bijan did his show.
Okay.
So I tried that, but that was sort of... it's okay. But
yeah.
There was more of a music spot.
Right, but you're up north anyways.
Yeah, I live in Carlsbad.
I mean, how did it feel that first time you went on after taking 4 years off?
Way better.
Really?
Yeah, way better, because I had started doing the class with Josh and Bijan,
mm-hmm.
and I just had, like, a couple jokes. I felt like, okay, you know, like, I was happy. Not that they were great jokes, but I knew I had something.
Were you writing that time when you were off?
I started writing jokes probably a couple months before, or trying to write jokes a couple months before I started doing the class.
Okay. And what's your writing procedure? Like, how do you write?
I think about things that I sort of have, like, an issue with. Like, you know, like something I don't like, and then trying to work that into a joke.
And do you write it on pen and paper?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, I write it out, and I try and write it out long form. And then eventually it breaks down to just a few notes, just like the punchline, you know, like on a note card.
Okay.
But I try it a few different ways, and then I try and say it.
But you don't, like, schedule a time, like, this is when I have to write?
I should. I definitely should. I definitely want to, but, yeah, I'm not organized. I'm not an organized person.
All right. That happens. I mean, how do you think the scene has evolved since you first started?
I think it's definitely got a lot more mics. Since the first time I tried an open mic, seems like the mics have probably gone up tenfold, it seems like. Maybe, you know, back then there was probably like three mics, and when you started, maybe, or four,
yeah,
or there more. Or there might have been more. I just probably didn't know about them.
I think really it was just the Comedy Store, Winston's, and Brick by Brick.
Yeah.
I don't even think the Palace had an open mic back then.
Yeah, and then and now it's like they're just popping up, seems like, left and right.
Right. Well, Stats still has an open mic, but it's mostly music. But back then, they used to have a lot of comics that would go to it.
Mal Hall, right? I think I saw him over there.
Yeah, because he was running the Tuesday open mic, Tuesday comedy show. But they had an open mic that people would go to. But then at some point, because I think this is when the first Madhouse closed.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then a lot of comics started going to the open mic there.
Yeah.
And then that the point is when they cut the comic time from 10 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So then comics were kind of upset about that.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think it's changed a lot. It's probably way easier to get stage time, at least as far as open mics are concerned.
Right.
And so that probably makes it easier to develop.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assuming. It definitely feels that way this time around in my second iteration.
Right. So you had a question for me that you wanted to ask?
Oh, yeah. So I want to talk about CD recordings. I've seen comics do CD recordings, like at the Palace, and you did yours at Lestat's. And I'm just wondering, like, what is the main objective of doing, or, like, you know, why did you choose to do one, or what prompted you? Like, what is the process, and what is
my
the reason?
My reasoning to do it was that, hey, I've been doing comedy for 4 years.
Yeah.
Here's what I've been doing for four. This is my graduation.
To yourself, yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
That's cool. That's
smart. Why I did it, because, I mean, I put it, me and Jesse put like a compilation CD out when we did our little tour.
Yeah.
You know, but unless you're touring and doing 45 minutes, there's really no need to have a CD.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to do an 8-minute set and be like, hey, I got a CD for sale.
Right.
You know, and I'm not getting very many headlining spots.
Yeah.
And people didn't really buy it anyways when we were on the tour. But it's just, for me, it was just like, this is my diploma. I've been doing comedy for 4 years.
Right.
This is what I have to show
That's
for.
Smart, in a way, because I didn't know that. Now that you say that, yeah, it makes perfect sense. But I didn't know people do that, you know, looked at it that way, but it does make a lot of sense. Like, you're working towards something. You
yeah,
know?
I don't think most people look at it. I think most people market it as, like, merchandise.
As merch, yeah.
Yeah, to sell on the road and whatnot. And
yeah.
Like, I know Zoltan does that. He sells a CD. And
does he make money off of that, do you think? Or
yeah,
something?
I think he does. Yeah. He sells them. But, you know, otherwise, there's no real reason to have it. But, I like I said, I just like to have it, like, this is what I've been doing.
Yeah.
You know.
And Jesse's doing one, too. Isn't he coming up?
Yeah, he's doing his in a couple of weeks. But
yeah.
I think that was more like if Bijan kind of asked him to do a show, and then he was like, why don't you record?
Do you retire those jokes then afterwards, or do you?
Not really.
Uh-huh. Like, you still got them. Like, there's no reason to not use them, right?
Right. I think the only time to really retire jokes is if they get on TV.
Yeah.
You know, but I do see people at the Comedy Store that would headline and then sell the CD of exactly what they just did, which I think is weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some people that bought my CD, because I riff a lot and I'll try different ways to tell a joke on stage. So like someone bought my CD and they were telling me like, well, I like how you changed this joke up, like the way it's different than the way you did it before.
Yeah.
You know, so it's okay to sell it, but I think it would be weird to do 45 minutes and then sell the same exact 45 minutes.
Okay.
But people do it, of course.
Sure.
So we're coming up to the end. I got a staple question for you. What's the worst show you've ever done?
Oh, crap, man. There's been so many.
Yeah.
It's hard to narrow it down.
Yeah.
I guess me and Cody Lohr, who I do the show with, went up to Orange County. And a buddy of his, really nice guy, was a musician. And he kind of liked our comedy from the Royal Dive, because he had seen us at the Royal Dive's open mic.
All right.
And he invited us to go up there. He was going to do a show, like a music show.
Right.
And he invited us to do comedy before his performance.
All right.
And we both just went up there, and it was a hookah lounge. They didn't even sell beer or anything. Just at hookah, but you could smoke weed pretty much in there.
Yeah.
And, like, the people were so far away from the set, from where our mic was at, and there were people playing video games, like, right next to where there was no stage.
Right.
But there's people playing, like, Pac-Man, like 5 feet away from us.
Yeah.
Not even paying attention. And, like, people way in the back of the room doing, like, smoking hookah. And it just did not work. We both got messed up before the show. And the show didn't go well. And, yeah, just...
Well, that was a good time.
Yeah. But it was Orange County, kind of on the road. Called that our road gig.
I guess you didn't get paid, I take it.
We got a couple bucks for it. We got, you know, but as far as just, like, the whole atmosphere, we waited for, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours before we even...
Yeah, when I was in Vegas, there was an open mic at a hookah lounge, and the guy was supposed to bring me up and totally forgot. And I was leaving, and the owner was like, I thought you were supposed to go on. I was like, he forgot to bring me up.
Yeah.
But he had already said the show is over.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we'll bring him back in. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. But
was that that was just for open mic?
An open mic.
Yeah.
What's the best show you've ever done?
Probably our first show at Porter's Pub last May.
Mm-hmm.
Cody and I put on a show. And I think I asked you to be on it. Remember? And then you got us Chris Curtis. And Chris Curtis came and did the show, and he did good. And everybody, I think every person, like every comic there, did pretty good.
Yeah.
Faraz Ozel headlined, and we had a really good turnout, which makes the show.
Was it a free show or was it a
No, we charged $5 for students.
Faraz went to that school, didn't he?
Yeah, and he graduated from there.
So did he bring that draw some people?
I think that may have he may have invited a few people, but I think Asan Ahmad, who was a student at the time, brought a good chunk of people, and we just hit it at the right time. I don't know how the heck it happened, and since then we haven't been able to duplicate that turnout. And so,
do you think $5 is too much?
It could be, yeah.
Deterring the people?
Yeah, a few people mentioned that to me, that it might be a little bit high for students, because, you know, La Jolla is already an expensive area.
Yeah.
College kids are typically broke in a lot of ways, so they didn't want to shell out the money for comedy, but we had a good turnout. But since then, it's been pretty light.
Pretty light, huh? But you're going to keep doing it once a month until they kick you out?
Yeah, I want to.
Right.
The owner kind of told me that in the beginning, Stefan. He was like, hey, man, don't get into this. If you're just going to quit, you know, don't get into this if you're going to have one bad show and quit.
Well, we're coming up to the end. Do you have anything for me before we close out?
Yeah, man. I'm surprised you had me on. But I appreciate it.
Well, four people turned me down, and I was supposed to message Aaron Freskas, but accidentally marriage you. So, I'm happy to have you on.
Thank you.
A good interview. I really enjoyed it. So,
me too.
You're listening to WSRadio.com, the Worldwide Internet Talk. See you back next week. Bye. Now.